part of the Black Liver Project. This is a history podcast, history through cocktails, where we look at a cocktail and we talk about the who, what, when, where, why, and how of the cocktail itself, go into a deep discussion of the cocktail, but then we also...
Your language is so erotic.
Isn't it?
Subconsciously, it's like, deep cocktail history, his story, deep... Cocktail. Cock deep.
This is erotic history of the cocktail.
Okay. And joining me tonight to tell the story of this cocktail is Mr. Jason Cruz.
Hello. The dude who digs.
And also joining us is Professor Mick the Bone Dr. Layman.
I bone. Therefore, I am.
We're going to talk about the Curacao Punch. This is another really old one, I think.
Yeah.
It's an old one. And it's named after a place.
It is.
And so that's always cool.
It's got a fancy C in there.
Got that, the C.
The curly C.
That C thinks he's better than the other C's.
He's the fancy C.
Jerk.
So yeah, the Curacao Punch, which is made with sugar, lemon juice, soda water.
It comes already made in the bottle.
Brandy.
Thanks, Jewel.
Is that really Curacao Punch? No.
This is just the Curacao.
Oh, sorry. My mistake.
Got soda water, brandy, orange Curacao, which we're going to take a taste of, not an actual mix of Curacao Punch, and Jamaican rum. So, what Haig says is this first shows up in Harry Johnson's New and Improved Bartender's Manual, 1882. And so I started there. And we're going to drink. Yeah, that's orangey.
I think I cleaned some stuff with that once.
Oh, yeah. I think that's delicious.
It's pretty good.
I like oranges.
It's not dry.
No.
I like oranges.
I do. I like oranges, too. So, I started with the Harry Johnson recipe from 1882. And then it also shows up in his 1934 revised edition. So both recipes call for Curacao, and they call for red Curacao, not orange, which was weird. I couldn't really totally figure out why or why it was red. The 1934 edition calls for Martell's brandy, but the 1882 edition doesn't call for anything specific.
Wow, really specific, though, like a proprietary commercial thing.
Yeah, a lot of times they did that. I mean, at certain points of time, they would say, well, you know, just use rum or use Bacardi rum.
Whatever the editor or the publisher owned.
Pretty much. I think that's how it worked, or, you know, whatever they were getting kickbacks from. Right. In the 1882 edition, you get more sugar, more lemon juice is probably used to offset that. And then water in 1882 and seltzer in 1934. So slight differences between these recipes. I looked through his book, and he uses a lot of Curacao in his recipes.
Okay.
And I didn't really find this to be true of any other cocktail book I found.
What is Curacao?
I was going to say.
We've got to go into Curacao. Curacao is the name of a place.
It is? Yeah, it is.
It is an island in the Caribbean. Now, it's a small island. I think it's fairly close to South America.
Right off of Venezuela, I think.
It was originally inhabited by Arawak natives, the same people who were originally on Cuba. All of the Caribbean was basically inhabited by this same
group. Oh, and did,
group.
Like, native...
Yeah. Now, they weren't necessarily all affiliated, but, like, they all basically... They colonized the Caribbean over time.
Interesting. They're like islanders in the Pacific.
Yes.
Now, Polynesians are all
exactly,
over.
Exactly. Creating their own tribes and their own groups. Mm-hmm. The island itself was discovered, if you want to say that, by the Spanish in 1499. And by then, they'd already been through much of the Caribbean, you know, 1492 being when they first landed there. And so they already had an idea of how it was going to go down. And so they landed and quickly enslaved the population. This is the thing about Curacao, is when they got there, you know, like every island they went to, they're like, where's the gold? Where's the gold? Where's the gold? And Curacao had really nothing. They had no gold. Not at all. Like, some of the islands, I think, had some, but there was nothing on Curaçao.
Wasn't Curaçao a volcanic island?
I believe it was, and it had a lot of this black soil.
Pointy.
This crumbly black. So the Spanish landed, they took the population, and they enslaved them and relocated them to where the mines were. So that got rid of that problem.
Yeah.
Didn't have to deal with the natives anymore. But now the Spanish had to figure out what to do with this island. It's like, we've got this island. What are we going to do with it? Yeah. What's
the plan? It's a big island. Like, all of the islands that are around it, I think it's... Is it the biggest? Bigger? I think it was... There's, like, a chain of islands that are over around it. And really? I think it's the biggest one. And I think it's also the closest to Venezuela. So yeah, you'd want to do something.
So what they did was they brought Valencia oranges. And they planted... Delicious. They planted orange trees. You know, they were going to have orange groves. They're like, this is a great place for citrus. You got the sun... The space works well for the trees. We're going to have a citrus stop, place for the sailors and stuff to keep down the scurvy.
Yeah, keep it down. A citrus stop, like 7-Eleven.
Oh, thank heaven.
Yeah.
Curaçao.
I don't have scurvy no more.
So when the trees finally bore fruit, the oranges grew out with this thick, tough skin.
Wow, demon oranges.
And the fruit was nasty. It was
real bitter.
Terrible.
Really?
It was inedible.
Wow.
So they're like, fuck this.
We're fucking leaving Curaçao, assholes.
It's kind of
God like is punishing us.
So like yeah. in 1634 the Dutch basically took it over.
That makes sense. Because they're evil. Sorry, Copenhagen.
Now the Dutch actually made something. They called
the secret?
The oranges were called Laraja, and when the Dutch arrived, they actually made this island of hell because there was nothing on there. It was worthless to Europeans for the most part.
Huh.
But they found that the oranges were delicious if you took the peels and you turned them into booze.
The peels to booze?
Yeah.
And they were they were putting it in beer. Their Belgian beer and their Dutch beers.
Well, that's smart.
Yeah, right?
What a taste.
Yeah. They made something of the Laraja.
That's how refined they are, really. Spanish were like, just, they can't rationalize.
Like,
they just
fuck, you can't eat this shit. Yeah. They're like, what, did you try putting it in booze?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
How about if you just made booze?
Yeah. Right.
Oh! What a
damn
good
it!
Idea.
We turned it over to the Dutch.
I know, exactly.
Yeah.
We could have had booze! Orange booze!
It could have been a gold mine!
Right, really, really, for sure.
Now that the Dutch have had Curaçao, I kind of think that Curaçao ended up becoming a really bad place. It became a huge hub for slavery. Hmm. Like, slave auctions, slave dealing.
Like, coming out of South America?
Coming out of Africa. Yeah. Coming out of... So, like, it was a slavery hub.
That's its thing.
There were a couple of guys who were there who made tons of money. That's what Curaçao became. It also became a pirate hangout. And the interesting thing about that, here's something that I'd never heard of before, and it makes a lot of sense and is kind of cool, but there were a lot of Jewish pirates there. And there were actually a lot of Jewish pirates in the Caribbean. In fact, a lot of pirates in general were Jewish. And there's a very specific reason for that. In Spain, at the time, the Inquisition was going on.
Get on a boat.
And they had to get out fast. Mm. Like Vasco da Gama, he was Portuguese, sailed around the world. Mm. His navigator was a Jew who took his name. He claimed he was a da Gama.
Fascinating.
But that was to keep him out of the...
Yeah, you change your name too.
I'm sure that they were friends. I'm sure that they... Yeah. And he was saving his life, essentially.
Yeah.
You know? A lot of other... Jews were getting on ships, becoming navigators.
That's fascinating.
They were good with the numbers, and so they were perfect for...
They had the shanties? The shanties.
That
they could create the music.
The accordions.
The accordions. The devil's instruments.
There was one guy who was actually a Spanish naval commander. His name was Yaakov Curiel.
That's awesome.
And I believe when he was a child, his family had converted to Christianity. But that wasn't good enough. So eventually the Inquisition caught up to him and took him. And he was a well-known, respected military figure in the Spanish Navy. And he was still taken by the Inquisition. His sailors rescued him.
Wow, what a story.
They were all Jewish. They were called Maroons.
That's not a movie yet? Okay.
Not as far as I know.
We're going to L.A., folks. Bye-bye. Holy shit.
When he escaped, he took three ships and hit the high seas and spent, you know, years and years hunting Spanish ships.
That's awesome.
So there were a lot of pirates out there purely for revenge. Almost all of them were hunting Portuguese and Spanish boats. And here's another interesting thing. A lot of them, when it was time to retire, you gathered up as much cash as you could that you could liquidate.
Yeah.
And then you went to New York. And the reason why New York and Curaçao and Jamaica, I believe, were all very popular for the Jewish population, for the Jewish pirates, is because the Dutch liked them. They welcomed the Jewish. So wherever there were Dutch ports, it also attracted the Jewish population.
That's awesome.
And so
history through who's got money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that always pirates. History?
Yeah, but nobody talks about it that way, per se.
No.
It's all about freedom and such.
A couple of these guys were also on Curaçao, and they were the big money makers in the slave trade. Mm. So
that shows you how much money there was, man.
Oh, it was
galleons, which has been ridiculous.
It was ungodly.
How much was it fake? Because you got to imagine, like, they were running all over the place. They're like, there's gold everywhere. They're just like, there's gold every place we go. There's just got to be gold here. Find gold. Dude, settle down. There's not gold.
They did it, though. I mean, at least they found it where they could, you know? Yeah. Killing everybody in their wake.
I know, right?
Even if you're a little town, like, they're pulling out your grandma's teeth, you know?
Yeah.
Tell us where your gold is.
Yeah, it's a great
space. Is gold?
Oh, man, that's horrible.
You know, take whatever you want.
You know what one of the popular ways of getting people to relinquish their gold was?
Malocs?
You'd hoist them up by their testicles.
Oh, wow. You could bear that? For a bit.
Yeah.
Depends on how fat you were.
Until they fell off.
How high they pull you
that's
up.
That's horrible.
Yeah, that was one of their favorite torturing techniques. Another thing, the Barbary Pirates. That was one of the first wars that the United States became involved with, and that was in the Mediterranean. We helped Europe with these guys who were in North Africa and basically just terrorizing the Mediterranean Sea. They were affiliated with the Ottomans. The Barbary Pirates were led by a Jewish pirate as well, and he was, again, a vigilante from Spain.
Yeah.
You know, so it's an ongoing story. But anyway.
It balances it. It balances the story, really, you know?
And it seems so perfect.
Yeah.
It's like, well, of course that's what happened.
Yeah. It's a consequence action thing. It's like, well, yeah, you're going to be dicks about your religion and kick everybody out. Well, people are going to find a way.
Yeah, and this was a fantastic way to both get rich and get your revenge. So,
but not good for, like, anti-Semitic feeling, you know what I mean? I mean, it just adds to that fire if they're the bad, horrible guys who are pirates now, you know?
Yeah,
and they're
but
just trying to make a living.
At some point, you know, do you care? Well, you know, it's like...
Who has the money,
for
sure.
How much more dead do you want me? You
know? Yeah, for sure. And if you've got the money, what does it matter?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you've got friends in the islands.
Yeah.
And in New York.
And it sort of makes sense that Curaçao would probably be a huge, you know, if it's so big, if it's the biggest of this chain of islands, if it's right near Venezuela, it's probably made sense for at least the Spanish to be like, you know what, we don't have really, you know, we tried the orange thing, that's not working. It's a big enough island where they could, you know, they're probably, holding slave auctions, sending them off.
But this isn't the Spanish, it's the Dutch.
Whoever is doing
it. And so they took it over. And, you know, I checked out the people who still make Curaçao on the island. There is a distiller.
Oh, really?
And if you look at their website, they have a little section where they talk about how they've been there for, you know, since early 1800s, making Curaçao. And they said, we were here before then, but the history is kind of sketchy. That's what they say.
Wow.
So they're willing to say...
How many marketing people they pay? How many words did they go through to get this sketchy where everybody's like, okay, I can buy sketchy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That shit fascinates me.
Yeah.
Because you know they went through, like, black, dark, questionable, you know, like to get to like sketchy is okay.
Downright evil.
Yeah, exactly. Bad. Unethical.
This was a bad place.
We were dicks. Sorry. Drink our liquor. That's fascinating. Me. It's fascinating, man.
So, yeah.
So they've been there doing it, and they're still doing it.
Yeah.
And it's the thick orange rind liquor. That's what it is.
Yep. Yep. That's where it's coming from.
So, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of recipes coming out of the 1800s. And everybody makes it a little bit differently, I mean, based on these recipes. But the liqueur, it's generally, it seems like it's made with the oranges, the peels. It's made with brandy or some kind of spirit, usually a dark spirit. And then spices.
Like Lucifer? Sorry
about that. That's one of the recipes.
Yeah, I bet.
Take Lucifer, throw some oranges in it, and then like some kind of spices. I kept seeing things like cinnamon and vanilla. Sometimes they, you know, orange. What was that orange flower water? Sometimes I found one where they put saffron in it, but they're typically brandy based. But sometimes they call for gin. Or rum or whiskey, which to me is like, whatever you have.
Just keep pouring it in there. Just
put the orange peels in it. And again, that's going to be the crucial ingredient. And, you know, the traditional curacao actually is clear. It doesn't have a color. Hmm. Then others would say it will have a yellow or amber light brown in color, but depending on the spices they're adding, too. Nowadays, blue curacao is popular, you know, or even like the red curacao that Harry Johnson would call for. It's like, well, where did the red come from? Dyes.
Yeah.
Yellow number 5.
All right.
Just, red number 7.
It's all dyes. Even back then, it was like, just dye it. Just whatever. It's clear, so just make it look fancy. Yeah. You know, it'll make the drink look nice. But we have.
I wonder if blue curacao was dyed with indigo originally.
I think that's more contemporary than the blue.
Oh, the blue curacao? Yeah.
I think that's
more. They were growing indigo on curacao.
Oh, okay.
Most of the recipes that I found said it was going to be clear or yellow or light brown. The red, I kept looking for it. I was like, well, how did it get the red color? And it's like, I think in one place I found it said, then put red dye in your curacao to make it red. It's like, oh, that's... So I looked around and I thought, okay, so it's Harry Johnson, great, whatever, who cares? I didn't find it in very many recipe books, like 2 or 3. I thought, well, then why did this survive? I mean, like nobody, and it wasn't like big recipe books. It was just like, oh, this guy says, you know, make it too. So I kind of put it aside and I thought, okay, well, it's just a thing. It's just one of those things that survives. By just dumb luck, I was searching through Jerry Thomas's book, and he has a recipe for making curacao liqueur. I thought, okay, I didn't find anything else, but I was just kind of flipping through it, and I came across a recipe for curacoa punch. And it's spelled different. So curacao is C-U-R-A-C-A-O, and he was spelling it C-U-R-A-C-O-A. And so I looked at the recipe and just make sure it matched, and it matches exactly.
Wow, really?
Sugar, brandy, Jamaican rum, water, curacao.
Holy fuck.
Curacoa, he says.
Curacoa, yeah.
And it doesn't have cocoa added or something?
Nope.
Coa-coa?
Curacoa.
I like
Coca-Cola.
I'm reading it. Sip the nectar through a straw.
And all of them say that, too.
What a wordsmith.
But I think it's, like, it had something to do with the
taste.
So,
wait a minute. So, Jerry Thomas?
So, Jerry Thomas was the first one, not Harry Johnson.
And everybody thinks it's Harry Johnson because of a spelling mistake?
Everybody thinks it's Harry Johnson because of a spelling mistake. And I looked around online just to make sure. I thought, well, clearly I could not have been the first one.
Yeah, because there are people who know his Jerry Thomas's book.
Right. And so,
like the back of their hand.
When I looked at it, you know, there are blogs that say, you know, make the curacao punch from Jerry, that I made it from Jerry Thomas's recipe. But they're not really talking about it as if it's a disputed fact. They're just saying, I have Jerry Thomas's book. I make Jerry Thomas recipes. Here's a Jerry Thomas recipe. I couldn't find anybody who was really like, hey, you know what? People keep saying it's Harry Johnson, but it's really Jerry Thomas. Most people say it's Harry Johnson, but what they're doing is they're quoting Ted Haig's book. They'll say, Haig says it was Harry Johnson who first printed this. And I was like, it actually wasn't. It turns out it was Jerry Thomas, which happens a lot, you know, because Jerry Thomas is the guy. He's the first one to, you know, to create a recipe.
Well, and especially now, if this cocktail comes back suddenly, like we've seen that that Ted Haig's book has really brought back to life a lot of cocktails.
Right.
And in the age of search engines, you aren't going to find it if it's misspelled.
Exactly. And that's why I didn't find it at first. It was only through dumb luck that I just happened to be flipping through and I went, wait, what?
All of these books have been digitized, right?
Jerry Thomas's, Harry Johnson's, they're all digitized.
Yeah, so it's, that's invisible.
But even though it is at this point in the program, we award you the golden spade of digging.
Well, see, and
this is a medal that is awarded to you, Jay.
And here's the one
digging
that,
and finding.
No shit.
That's awesome.
And one of the things that I kept thinking, and you mentioned like David Wondridge, who has a book on Jerry Thomas, and you said, well, clearly David Wondridge would have known. And I couldn't find anything that said whether or not he did. But I have to assume he did. He wrote a book.
No, you need to write a paper right now.
I assume he at least knew that the recipe was there. I'm not sure if it's such a disputed fact, but the problem is the internet. Ted Haig puts out this book that everybody uses, and they just go, "Well, Ted Haig says
he
this,"
said it,
and yeah. Nobody questions it. And so you're like,
because he's the expert.
So the information just keeps getting recycled and recycled through blog,
and anybody who does a minimal search, even digs a little bit,
yeah.
Is not going to find this.
No, you would have to know Jerry Thomas's book.
Yeah.
Or you would have to, like, be paging through it.
This is the Vorpal Sword for Ted Haig. It's time, Jay.
It's time for the leg wrestling.
It's time.
It was kind of, I mean, again, it was dumb luck that
just
I even...
You and him on YouTube.
Thumb wrestling?
Thumb wrestling. And then you'll come across with the index.
It was Jerry Thomas.
Bam!
It was Harry Johnston.
Oh, way. Bam!
I would win.
You would.
So once I had that information, I started looking up the wrong spelling. And then it starts showing up in a ton of recipes.
Whoa!
That's pretty cool.
Because Jerry Thomas was the man.
Yeah.
Everybody just reprinted his recipe.
So was it after his book? Were there any before his book?
That was the thing. I started...
Because now it's sounding like the drink is actually called the Curacoa Punch.
Right. So once I figured that out, I was like, okay, well, I know from experience from doing this that knowing the things about the island and the Dutch, making it, I was like, it's got to be, the liqueur has got to be older. Jerry Thomas has a lot of recipes in his books that he did not create.
Yeah.
He just wrote down.
Tom Collins was one of them.
So I started looking for Curacoa Punch just randomly outside of cocktail books, and it starts showing up everywhere. Wow. And older. And there's like a list lately landed from the Herculean, a consignment of the above quarts and magnum double quart bottles. So this is sort of a list of booze, basically, that's traveled over in a boat. July 23rd, 1847.
Wow.
Curacoa Punch is listed. I kept finding it all throughout the 1840s and 1830s. The earliest place I could find it was in a book called Pelham or The Adventures of a Gentleman.
Of course.
I know, right? 1831, and they mentioned Curacoa Punch. So I can't definitively say where it was created or when, but I would guess, you know, based on the timelines that we have, it's got to be as early as the 1820s that the punch is actually a thing.
That's great, man.
And I thought, so I'm going through this and I'm running this through my head. I'm going, it's probably, I mean, if all of these things are showing up 1830s, 1840s, 1820s is probably.
This is one of the oldest ones we've done that.
It's pretty cool.
And then I started looking, I'm like, well, I haven't found a recipe yet though. I assume that there is not a second Curacao punch floating around out there with a totally different recipe. It would seem a little bit unusual. And then I found a recipe. And this was the oldest recipe I could find. It wasn't in a cocktail book. It was in a magazine called Family Herald, a domestic magazine of useful information. And this was
I love it when they tell you what you're going to get.
Right, I know.
It's fantastic.
No misleading information. It's not called Time or Life.
Right. I don't have to fucking think about
it. No.
People? Fucking people do I have to sift through?
This is for domestic people, and it's going to be useful information.
God damn it.
And the way it's laid out is just, like, text, no breaks. Just shit.
If you can fucking read, you're going to learn some shit.
Right. It's just, and it's not even just, like, a whole page of stuff. It's just, like, random stuff. Just, and then this, and this. And within that, there's a recipe for punch.
The following was the Prince Regent's recipe for making Curacoa punch. And now this recipe is slightly different. Extract the essence from the rinds of 3 lemons by rubbing them with lumps of sugar. Put these into a large jug with the peel of 2 Seville oranges.
Massage your laraja.
Massage your laraja. And of 2 lemons extremely thin, the juice of 4 Seville oranges. And of 10 lemons and 6 glasses of calf's feet jelly in a liquid state. I was like, whoa, funky. Stir these well together. Pour them to 2 quarts of boiling water. Cover the jug closely. Set it near a fire for a quarter of an hour. Then strain the mixture into a punch bowl. Sweeten it with a bottle of Capillaire, which is, it's also like kind of a liqueur, but it's a herbal. It's got the,
it's got herbals and shit.
Yeah, it's some kind of herbal liqueur. Half a pint of white wine, 1 pint of French brandy, 1 pint of rum, and 1 bottle of Curacoa. Stir the punch. That's a lot of booze. They added extra booze. But this is the Prince Regent. The
with
prince, who likes feet? To party.
Mix it with calf's feet. And then stir it with your feet.
I thought it said useful information. Not well, nasty information.
This is how to kill the Prince Regent.
Right. Well, the Prince Regent they're talking about is probably... So this came out in 1848.
He threw who their best parties, you know.
He did, actually.
He really did.
George the Fourth.
Holy shit.
He was the son of the Mad King, George the Third. And he became Prince Regent in 1811. And he was known for his extravagant taste and spending money and on lots of art and fancy stuff. So
he jellied a lot of calves.
He drank a lot of booze. But he has a recipe for making Curacoa punch.
That's fantastic.
So let's say he was Prince Regent became Prince Regent in 1811. And it's hard to follow because his father was still alive but crazy. So he wasn't king.
Yeah.
His brother, I think, became king. His younger brother, because he was the heir apparent. And then the Prince Regent died, so there wasn't another Prince Regent. So we got to figure like 1820s, 1830s. The Prince Regent, he's making cocktails in the 1830s.
Wow.
He's like, what, Prince Harry? Is that the crazy
pretty
one?
Pretty much.
The red one?
Yeah. And that's that's Britain. I mean, the Dutch were in the mix and, you know, Germans and everything. But like the Prince Regent was making cocktails. So isn't that...
Dude, once you're like rich and imperial, you can fucking hang out.
I mean, he probably wasn't making them, I'm guessing. He probably had a servant who was making it, but
he
at least had a
it.
Recipe.
Yeah, he put a stamp on it.
Which predates Jerry Thomas.
That's awesome.
By a lot.
Yeah. So Jerry Thomas, as he's done with a lot of things, and he never said, I created this. It shows up in his book, which a lot of recipes that come before show up in his book. The weird thing about this drink is that it kind of just disappears after a certain point. So like the 1920s and 1930s, just goes away. And right before Prohibition. So I can find it all in these cocktail books. And I thought, what the hell? Because you know when we've been doing this, things that disappear right before Prohibition, all of a sudden start showing up in, you know, Harry McElhenney's book.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
The Savoy cocktail book. And Patrick Gavin Duffy and Robert Vermeer and Cafe Royal. And so it's sort of like the lapse of time is explainable. But even in their books, it doesn't show up in any of their books. So I thought, okay, well, Curacao must have gone out of style or something, or there was a lack of supply.
Yeah.
But I looked through their books, and they all have tons of recipes with Curacao in it. It just, including the Curacao cocktail. One had a Curacao omelet. It sounded
wow.
fucking disgusting, but
wow.
I was like,
it, though. That's
right.
The thing. It's not,
right.
It's not like they fucking
yeah.
ran
they
out.
They had extra. They were like, just pour it on the eggs. That's fine.
Whatever.
Just,
I like orange
some... It's a hangover cure,
gross.
Trust me.
What they couldn't get was jellied calf's feet.
Right.
That's the problem.
How come that went out of style for cocktail?
Gross.
Give me a pint of jellied calf's feet. So I thought, okay, well, it's Curacao is not the lacking ingredient. I thought maybe Jamaican rum disappeared. Nope. It was also there all through the U.S. and Europe and all through Prohibition. Brandy was just heavily used all the time, and you could make brandy at home during Prohibition. I looked through books from the 1920s to the 1950s, and I found it in 3 books. One was a Dutch book called Hoe Maakt Men American Plain and Fancy Drinks.
That was
which
the best.
Translates
that
to
was the fucking best.
Something about American fancy drink.
That's the fucking best.
But that's from 1922, so, you know, it's there, but that makes sense. I mean, they're kind of the people who make curacao. Another one called Jane's Bartender Guide, Practical Handbook for Professionals and Amateurs, 1934. And then The Artistry of Mixing Drinks, 1936. And that's it. I couldn't find it anywhere else. I looked through every book I had access to. It shows up in Harry Johnson's revised edition, but he was dead by then. They were just reprinting with variations. But incidentally, it's spelled, in the 1934 edition, it's spelled Curacoa, like Jerry Thomas's book. In his 1882 edition, it's spelled Curacao. So Jerry Thomas was that pervasive in the minds of these cocktail people that they were like, oh, he must know. Mm-hmm. But if you go back far enough, I mean, all these recipes, even, you know, Prince Regent's, it's Curacoa. And I thought, well, what's the reason for this? There must be a reason. How could they be spelling it wrong?
From the very beginning.
I looked at maps from the time. Dutch maps, British maps. Everyone spells it Curacao. So I have no idea.
It seems to be like a problem that people had.
Yeah. I mean, people didn't give a shit.
It was that it's the curly C that just fucked them up.
They're,
right.
like, they're like, I already put the A in it, right?
Are there pictures of the prince and his eyes are all crossed and shit? He's all inbred and crappy.
They asked him how it was spelled, and he was like, C-U-R-A-C, I don't know, A-O-A, yeah, that's good, just put that down.
It's like Coco.
Yeah.
Sure. Coa.
Whatever. I own everything.
Right. So I couldn't find any explanation for the name change, but I also couldn't find Curacao or Curacoa for the next, basically, up until the 1960s,
that's
when
nuts.
They were talking about Curacao as a tourist destination, saying, have a Curacao punch. And then it disappears again, and then, like, in the 1980s, they're talking about Curacao again, but it kind of disappears.
So Haig brought it back.
I think so. And
as the Curacao, though, right?
Well, I wouldn't even say Haig, because he says Dale DeGroff, one of the most famous barmen in the world, author of The Craft of the Cocktail, holds this to be his favorite forgotten potion. So I think Dale DeGroff brought it back. He could have said, I got it from Harry Johnson's book, and Haig was just repeating that, and there goes the story, keeps going. But
wow.
Yeah. A spelling error.
Yeah. A long-held spelling error.
Right. And but then it's weird because...
At some point, that's just the truth at that point. Right. Yeah. You know?
Well, because they were just... It was like... I don't know how you copy and paste in the 1800s, but they were copying and pasting all the shit over there. They were like, that's fine. I know it's Curacao. It doesn't matter.
It's true. It's probably like one dick scribe. It was just like, fuck it. Yeah. And then everybody's like, well, he did it.
Oh, this must be the right spelling, right?
Like, who am I to say?
I have no spell check on this thing.
I'm not going to fuck this up. I like this job. Fuck that.
Yeah.
Whatever.
They probably didn't know it was named after an island or anything else. Right, they were just like...
Copying.
It's named after the liqueur, and he says it's called Curacoa, so Jerry Thomas isn't wrong. What do we...
Wow. Well, good job. Thank you.
Yeah, man. This is your step in. This is it. This is your foyer into the arena.
This is when I get the call. The call.
Hey, yeah. You're going to get...
silence on the other line.
A big-ass, like, metallic pee from, like, National Lampoon is going to roll up. Hey, it's going to be in there. And he's like, get the fuck in. Get in. You're in the club.
Yeah.
You figured it out. And then
we've been trying to push Curacao for years.
Yeah. Get him. So you better write that fucking paper tonight.
It'll be called The Bad Spelling of People in the 19th Century.
So
you yourself has terrible English throughout the whole thing.
Right.
Making it more reputable.
I'm gonna spell everything wrong.
Dave, have you seen the misspelled Wikipedia?
Isn't that all of Wikipedia?
Yeah, I was going to say, like...
Wikipetia. And if you actually... I was looking up
Curacao. Yeah?
If you put in... I put in Curacoa misspelled, and it came up with the Wikipedia... Put in misspelled Curacoa, or misspelled Curacao or something.
It's a bizarro interwebs where everything is spelled
and
fucked
if you
up.
Look,
and
the entire entry
the real
is
knowledge
misspelled.
In Wikipedia.
So look at it. Oh, look at all the spelling.
It's got an app. Well, it's great.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Liquor.
That's fantastic. There you go. You're home, Jay. You're home.
See? They knew. Liquors.
Yeah.
It all tastes the same.
That
delicious.
And that ultimately is what it came down to for me. I was like, you know what? They didn't care. They didn't need to spell it. They just had to drink it. Yeah. So...
because half of them couldn't read anything.
Right. So, what is this spot? I know it by color.
They're nodding to reading so much. As in, they are to get drunk, you know.
So that's the story of Curse Apple. That's beautiful. A story. Thank you for looking it up. And now we're going to go drink a Curacoa Punch.
Jesus. Yeah.
Curacao Punch. 1/2 tablespoon. Sugar, 3 dashes fresh lemon juice, 1 ounce soda water, 1 ounce brandy, 2 ounces Marie Brizard's orange curacao, 1 ounce Appleton Estate Jamaican rum.
They can choke themselves. They climb up a tree and...
oh, no. It was a harness. It was a harness.
That's comforting.
But, like, I have to watch a lot of, like, camera footage in my job. And, like, because we do these package lockers. And this lady went to go pick up her package with her cat on a leash.
I have something very special for you. It is an Instagram called Adventure Cats. And it's people going camping and hiking with their cats.
Oh, my God.
There's one where they're skiing with the cat.
Dragging along, like...
the cats seem into it.
Yeah, really? Post that on the thing.
The cats are really into it.
They are?
Yeah. They're adventure cats.
Okay.
I was just so happy because... I was kind of upset. Well, first I was like, oh, my God, there's a cat on me. And then, like, I see, like, the lady with this cat goes up and talks to our technician who's there. And I was just like, I talked to this guy for, like, 20, 30 minutes today, and he never told me he met this cat on a leash. I'm upset. I thought we were friends. So I, like, have these, like, 2 30-second clips, because I can save video clips in this program. And I saved them, and they're both called, cat on a leash!
Dissolving the sugar cubes?
Oh, wow.
Old school.
I'm amazed sugar still nice. What are sugar cubes used for these days, other than, like, feeding horses?
Impressing your friends.
Yeah. Do they still use them at tea in London?
I hope that they have the tiny silver tongs
to
pick them up with.
My kids would just go crazy for that.
I have some.
You have...
my dad has the ones that, like, actually look like a pair of, like, claws. Like, there's, like, they're, like, paws with claws.
Like the hay tongs,
big. Well, they're like this big.
That'd be awesome if you had like the big ones and you're picking up sugar.
I have some cheapy ones.
Okay, so we are here at the Brixton, ready for a curacao punch, a curacao, curacoa, a curacoa punch. So I'm joined by Kevin Ortajczyk.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, Kevin, how's your spelling?
Quite good.
You're a good speller.
Damn.
That's a good thing.
Terrible memory, but good at spelling.
Well, spelling is a very important thing we've discovered. We're also here with Mr. Eric Martin.
Howdy ho!
Who's also Mr. Hankey. How's your spelling?
Moderate. I grew up with computers, so I'm at a disadvantage.
Yeah, so it thinks for you.
Exactly. I also can't count. Or tell time.
Yeah, I actually had the same issue because analog clocks, fuck them. I've learned since, but I swear I faked it until my mid-20s.
My question is, how are they going to test for Alzheimer's once my generation gets to the age to have Alzheimer's? Because the analog clock is one of the first indicators.
There'll be a cure for it by then.
What?
There'll be a cure for it by then.
Yeah, we'll have found
Eric's young. We'll have fixed it. We'll have fixed it.
Either that, or we won't be able to tell anymore, because everybody will be acting essentially the same. Nobody will have a short-term memory.
No.
What?
We're also joined by Rachel Rubin.
Hello.
And your spelling?
It's better than it used to be.
Even in French?
Yes. Well, no. French is one of those things like calculus that's been replaced with, like, trivia that you pull out when you're drinking. Like, it's just been, you know, that part of the brain has been filled in with other information.
Yeah. And you know, French itself, it's like half of the letters aren't even pronounced in a word.
Yeah. At one point I was a French major, and then that stopped. And now
you're like, fuck this. These words don't make sense. Use your fucking letters, French.
Yeah.
No, but she likes their number system a lot. She tells me
because it's bonkers.
Yeah.
Why
is it? Where's the one, the number you really like? 78? Is that right?
Or, yeah, yeah, 78 or like 80 something. Or even, no, the 90s are really great once you get into the 90s. 91 is in French 20 times 4 plus 11.
Really?
Yes.
So say it.
What is that? 91, I think.
What is it?
91.
Huh. Okay. So, yeah, that makes sense, because I took French, too.
Yeah, and if
you
want to say,
4-20-11, that's what you just said, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, that is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, that's...
70 is 60 plus, you know, whatever other number.
That kind of reminds me of that one country, I don't know which one it is, in North Africa, that didn't get the memo about the new calendar year. And so they're still, like, they're at, like, 6,000-something.
Good for them. I did look up, though, I meant to, and I just did the accent that's on the C in Curacao.
Yeah.
It's called a Cedi.
It's called a Cedi?
Cedi, yeah.
Okay, and where does it come from?
It's French.
From France.
It's like a little C under the C.
Yeah, the curly C?
Yeah.
The one that we derided?
Means you say...
Like a snake.
Now, is there a difference?
In the
kind of S sound?
French.
No, it's just...
I bet our French listeners are going to like this. It's going to be a popular episode. Send all,
right,
all of your emails to... Oh, that looks great.
The Carousel Punch. I layered it, which doesn't really call to do, but I just thought it would be kind of neat.
Yeah, it does.
And so what I did is I used a Coquetta glass. So it's an oddly shaped cocktail glass. And what I did is I just threw a couple of dashes of lemon, a little bit of soda water, and a sugar cube at the bottom of each glass.
Nice.
Or say at the bottom of the glass. And I let that sit. I let it dissolve naturally. I didn't muddle it or anything like that. You could muddle it or anything like that. It just said let dissolve, so I did. So as that sat, I then mixed in a mixing glass the rum, which was an ounce of dark rum. I used the Appleton Estate.
Cool.
I used their dark rum, 1 ounce of that. 2 ounces of the Carousel, the orange Carousel you brought in.
Uh-huh.
And then 1 ounce again of brandy or cognac, and I used a high-end cognac. So I stirred that up. I then poured it over crushed ice and into the glass, and then you mix it up and all that, but I thought it would be a prettier presentation to not mix it. There are no bubbles in there, so you are going to want to stir it up a little bit. Garnished with all the fruit I got in the house. That's a strong drink. That's 4 ounces of liquor in there. Two of them aren't that strong, but stronger than nothing.
Yeah.
And the other two are strong. So
that's
you're
the nature.
Whether you want to be or not. And it's a nice little fun little on your way out the door drink.
Yeah, cool.
Fantastic. Enjoy. Thank you.
It's probably good to enjoy these while Curacao is still an island.
Yes.
50 years it might not be. Also a good reason to enjoy steel drum music.
So do you think that this could be a punch?
I haven't been around for so long, Eric, so no, I want to make everything into a punch.
Rachel's MO is that she wants to make everything into a punch. She discusses the possibility of each cocktail
make it into a punch?
Enlarged, embiggened.
Because if I'm going to get drunk...
Like a fishbowl of it.
You sound like a lobbyist for the sherbet companies of the United States of America.
Can I add sherbet and lemon lime soda? And really Midwesternize some kind of alcoholic punch.
You could slip rum into that style of punch and no one would know.
I actually, so my roommate from my freshman year of college, who I had absolutely nothing in common with, and I think that's why we got along, and I still have nothing in common with this woman, but I'm still friends with her on Facebook like you do. And she was going to throw a party, and she was like, does anyone have any good recipes for a punch? And somebody posted this recipe on this Facebook comment, and it involved, like, lime sherbet and lemon-lime soda, of course. But then it also involved, like, 2 bottles of liquor.
Ooh.
And, yeah, like, champagne.
Yeah.
And then, like, maybe, like, a jar of, like, pineapple or something.
Sure.
Like, all the stuff mixed together, like, you can't taste the alcohol, but the last time I had this, I blacked out.
So,
it's
so
successful. Right.
It's the Methodist version, then.
Yes.
Were there any calves' feet?
No.
Jellied calves' feet?
No jellied calves' feet.
Did you try yet?
Those were on the side, the crackers.
That's yummy.
Yeah.
This is the Laraja drink.
Yes, when life gives you Laraja, make curacao.
That's right. That is good.
Just a hint of the bitterness left over.
It's very tangy.
Very orangey. So when I was listening to the history, I started thinking of, there's a How It's Made where they make triple sec, which is another kind of, like, orange. And I know that, like, you know, curacao and triple sec and Grand Marnier and Cointreau, which is kind of triple sec, like, kind of all live in that same orange liqueur family. I was just thinking about that, how they made it, how they flavored it, and how they did it.
Now curacao is going to be, it's not going to be as dry as triple sec,
yes,
which is, I mean, that's what triple sec means.
Right.
Yeah.
Thrice dry.
This is a very yummy punch.
It seems like something I've had before.
Really?
It like something very ordinary.
It's got rum flavors, and it's got sugar flavors, and it's got orange flavors.
It's like a rum and coke, but not... It's not like a whiskey sour, right?
No.
Long Island iced tea?
No, it's too fruity.
Yeah, it's too much fruit.
That being said, though, it's the citrus level, especially looking at the garnish, isn't too crazy, and I guess that's probably why you're digging it, too.
It's not overly citrusy. No, it's rum forward, and I love rum. Rum is delicious.
It is sweet, but it's good, though.
Yeah.
I
think it could be improved with some kind of anise flavoring, like a basil or a fennel flavor. I think that would work really well with this.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I saw Cam's eyes go up at the anise, and then at the fennel, it's he furrowed his brow.
You know what? I think that I confused fennel with caraway.
Not the same thing.
Oh.
So, like, rye bread?
Oh, yeah.
Rye bread, I have an immediate reaction
to. Okay. But as long as it's licorice-y, you're okay.
Yeah, if it's black licorice, I am in heaven. It's, like, the best thing ever. So when you say, this needs more anise, I'm like, yeah. Everything needs more anise. It goes without saying. For Easter, I got the kids a bag of black jelly beans.
Good.
Those poor children.
No,
they gave you all of their jelly beans, didn't they?
That was the, you know, cracking open the plastic egg and seeing an entire thing of black.
They're
just like
bunny turds. Yeah, get this out of here.
Yeah.
Bunny turds probably taste better than black jelly beans.
You know what?
You know what? I wouldn't know.
Because you haven't eaten black.
Because I far prefer bunny turds.
Well, apparently my parents' dog likes them. Rabbit turds.
Well, yeah, that's what dogs do. We have to keep ours out of the basement because he'll, like... Because the cat box is like a smorgasbord. It's like all you can eat.
The insoluble fiber is probably good for it anyway. It lacks complexity for me. Like, the bitterness helps, but maybe I'm just not one for fruity drinks.
It's very, very, very easy to drink, which is possibly dangerous considering there's a good amount of liquor in it. It doesn't taste...
It's not boozy.
No, it's not boozy. So, I mean, like, if you wanted to get drunk, you could drink one of these one after the other and then fall down.
And I feel like it's very refreshing.
It is refreshing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times I don't feel like these drinks are refreshing. They're too taxing. But, you know, that's it's usually the sourness or the, you know, the citrus.
Or the straight-up booziness.
Yeah, where you're just like, oh, this is like getting hit in the head with a 2x4.
You're very correct, though. It's not complex. It's not complex, but it's very easy to drink.
No, and you're right. It's the first thing I tasted was something that I felt tasted right out of college. You know, and you're not making complex shit at college.
No, you're really not.
No.
It's like Orange Crush and vodka or something.
I think it's the sugar. I think this is just because the sugar is higher than we're used to.
You're right. Yeah, I mean, it is so sweet.
It's not cloyingly sweet, but it is very sweet.
See, I'm fine with it. I think it's great.
I enjoy it.
I wouldn't want to make them because, you know, you have to, like, melt a sugar cube. And...
so what are
this is like a bartender's nightmare.
What are our ingredients? Can we make it into a punch since it's called a punch? Can we just make, like, a simple syrup instead?
Yeah, I'm sure you could.
Well, I mean, like, if you wanted to kick it up a notch, you could flavor your simple syrup with your anise flavor or your...
This was originally made in large batches for the Prince Regent.
The Dauphin?
No, that was French.
Wait. Okay. So English.
Yeah. So King George III, the guy who like had the redcoats running all over America and then starting the wars.
Not the Dauphin.
And then he went cuckoo for cuckoo clocks.
And then his son was really into partying and hanging out, and his name was associated with this drink. What?
The partier?
Yeah.
The dolphin?
Yeah, yeah. The dolphin.
That's what dolphin means. You can talk some more about French.
Maybe it had something to do with long noses.
Maybe. I always just like to picture a dolphin with a tiny crown.
That's very Lisa Frank of you.
Yes, with the rainbow.
It is French. So I wouldn't be surprised. They invented Baroque, so.
If this was a punch served at a party, I would have multiple glasses of it and then fall down.
Yeah, it would be easy to do.
Yeah.
So if you're hosting a swingers party, you know what to serve.
It's kind of, you know what this kind of reminds
strong,
me of?
Strong, sweet, non-offensive.
This reminds me a little bit
of... People of all tastes will like it.
This reminds me a little bit of the punch that Jeremy and Nicole used to serve at their New Year's parties. And of course, they're not here tonight.
Bastards.
Literally did make me fall down.
It's
and black
dangerous.
Out.
I have blacked out today.
Yeah, I've heard stories about shower stuff.
Yeah, you always turn on the shower curtain. That's the annual tradition. They put nutmeg on theirs, which is good.
Oh yeah, that would be good.
You know what you could do? You could throw some... absinthe in here.
There you go. Or
so
a little.
If you put a splash of absinthe in here, then you'd get your.
Or maybe a little teeny bit of.
Pernod. Like,
yes, Pernod.
Yeah.
If you wanted to change this into like making it into a punch and to make it easier on yourself, I imagine you would make a simple syrup to make it. You could infuse your simple syrup with whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
And therefore change the drink.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. This actually is hitting me in the head. It's pretty potent. Yeah. So, I personally am enamored with the fact that this has flown under the radar in modern times because of spell check.
It doesn't really surprise me that much because, like you guys are talking about, you don't have the dictionary to reference, you don't have the spell check to reference, you just have, you know, spell check is the guy copying it down.
Or hammering in the movable type, or they were looking at something previously and they're like, I don't know. He said it's this.
Spelling can change a lot. On the other hand, Shakespeare couldn't spell his own name, so... No one was a good speller then.
No.
It wasn't until Victorian times that people really paid attention to spelling being an important thing. So, spelling was never consistent.
You only had to get the meaning with an I.
Well, he spelled a lot of things differently than we would spell them today. Grammar and spelling has changed a lot throughout history. And everyone has their own standards, and that's not changing anytime soon. So.
Yeah, back like in the 19th century, or no, it was prior, in the 18th century, they were still using those big Fs for S's, right?
Mm-hmm. And V's for U's?
Yeah, that's right.
What's up with that?
You own one.
Are you You're serious? That's why they were doing it? To reduce...
I think it was actually a Latin character, and the W comes from the V being a U.
Okay. And those big Fs usually took the place of double S.
I don't know the history of the big
F. I think so.
Yeah. Except that it's like German.
I'm thinking about lieutenant now.
Well, that's a French word. Back to French.
Yeah. That's a French word.
Damn those French and their bureau for their language. They were mad that the word computer, the English word computer, existed in French, so they called it an ordinateur.
Yep. There's like, that's happened with a lot of stuff. Like, the French language police don't like there to be just, like, English words just getting inserted into the French language, so they'll come up with their own word. Or, like, they just get, like, really upset. Like, you can't say, like, le walkman. Like, you can't. It's like, no. Yeah.
I guess since it's a French name, I'm surprised that people didn't die over the misspelling of Curacao.
I mean, like, even today, how many Joe Schmoes on the street know that Curacao is an actual place?
No, you're right. You're right. And it's gone once it reaches America, especially at that time. Nobody had any idea.
Unless you watch House Hunters, you don't know that Curacao exists.
It's not a common word, and so nobody cares how it's spelled. So even if it's going to be a fancy liqueur,
it requires a special code to type it out on the keyboard.
If only the Beach Boys had released a hit single based on Curacao instead of Kokomo. They could have got a
sponsor. On the beach at Curacao.
It works. Same number of syllables.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
They should have capitalized on that a long time ago. Have you had one of these oranges in a non-liqueur form?
No. I kind of wonder if you can even get one, if you're not there.
Make hers with actual La Raja. I was actually, before we came out, I was looking at a recipe for a dry Curacao made by, like, a different company.
Yeah.
And they just describe it as, like...
orange.
They talk about the history, and they're just like, well, it's orange, and orange was so exotic to the Europeans way back when, yada, yada, yada. And I was just like, your history's straight up wrong, so I'm just not even going to pay attention to it.
I think if we saw this revived today, they would use more exotic citrus, like Buddha hand liqueur or something like that, or finger lime liqueur, instead of one of these bitter oranges.
Well, this says, selected bitter orange peel from Haiti, which is in the same region as Curacao.
Huh. That's really interesting. I wonder if there were other places that had enough of the same terroir that it...
I bet.
That it caused the same issue.
We can totally party with the Haitians.
Haitians? I'm pretty sure it's Haitians.
It's English. It doesn't matter.
Have you not watched Clueless? I will say, I enjoy this. I agree that it's not very complex. But I think it would make an effective punch.
Would you order this?
As an individual cocktail? No.
If there was one that was there, it wouldn't be one of your choices.
If I had to pay for this drink, I would not choose for this drink to be my choice on my bill. If this drink was given to me, I would be happy to receive it.
Okay. And you, Kevin?
Oh, it's good. I really like it.
Would it be enough to order yourself?
No, probably not.
Not special enough. And you, Eric?
I wouldn't order it myself. I want a cocktail to be like a messy breakup. You really like it at first, and then you reconsider, and then you make the wrong decision to drink five more.
If this was what was served all night, would you drink them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you show up somewhere and this was in the punch bowl. Like, you'd be happy to receive this.
It's better than sherbet.
I can't wait till we do the sherbet drink. So yeah, this was fun. I thought the cocktail was good. You know, there's so many great things out there. I don't know if I would order one myself either, but I thought it was pretty delicious, and that's because it was sweet. It's easy to like the sweet ones. When you get something more complex, it is definitely more exciting. You know, kind of like the Alamagoozlum and some other drinks we've tried, the Avenue. But in any case, we're going to head out. Go ahead and check us out on blackliverproject.com. We also have a Twitter feed where I post and promote the latest shows as well as events that we're doing. You can go look for Black Liver Project and find our Pinterest board where you can actually get the recipes and make them yourself. And we've got a Facebook page, of course. Who doesn't? And a lot of times you'll see more articles and such related to history and cocktails, or even just wacky, crazy cocktails. So keep listening, keep following us, keep having fun. And if you get a chance, shoot us a message and tell us if you've tried any of these, because we'd love to know. Until next time, bye now.
Over her shoulder rudely because she was standing there for 10 minutes. And none of them were cracked, but I guess they weren't the right color or something, because she kept... Oh my god. For a long time. I gave up on the eggs. She was still there when I left, for all I know. And the second time, I was like trying to get some frozen vegetables, because they have freight bags of frozen vegetables at Trader Joe's. And some woman had decided that she didn't have enough yoga in the yoga class she had obviously just come from in her yoga pants, and was doing yoga in the middle of the aisle for her friend, blocking the entire aisle. I was not the only person glaring, but she was oblivious.
That's amazing.
She had a little bit too much kombucha, I think.
Don't you see my
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I'd like to thank Jason Cruz for researching our content, our regular tasting team, Rachel Rubin, Kevin Ratajczyk, Bethany Lang, and Nicole Pizzini, for joining me in the grueling task of tasting the cocktails we discuss, the Brixton and their bartender, Michael Donnelly, for letting us cavort in their liquid playground, Dan Cruz for art direction and editing, and Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. Go to blackliverproject.com to see the show archive, become a member, contribute to the project, and get in touch with us. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter to get the latest news and, as it happens, updates during live events. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, let us blacken your liver.